You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
Politics in the United States have been pretty divided in recent years. That's no secret. People are divided sharply along party lines, and it can look like there's a big divide on ideological lines, too, with people lining up on the left and the right with not much room for middle ground.
Our next guest says things are more complicated. When we look at the American public as a whole, most people don't fit political labels like liberal and conservative or left and right, but that doesn't mean they're moderates either.
Nathan Calmo joins us now, formerly of Wisconsin. He's now an assistant professor of political communication at Louisiana State University. He's co-author with Donald Kinder of the new book, Neither Liberal Nor Conservative, Ideological Innocence in the American Public. Nathan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, from where I'm sitting, Nathan, this is really interesting because when you hear people who call in to political talk shows and when you do the job I do, you read a lot of people expressing ideological political opinions. It looks like everybody's on one side or the other. What do things look like, though, when we start to look at the public at large?
A lot of those perceptions are a little bit misleading when you think about the people who are writing letters to the editor, who are the commentating class, people who call into radio shows, much of your audience, I'm sure. There is a higher level of political sophistication that starts to look a little bit more like ideology in the public. But if you look at the public as a whole, most of the public really doesn't have this kind of way of structuring their political attitudes, of using ideological labels like liberal and conservative to guide their choices about issue attitudes or about who they're going to vote for.
We've been surveying people for a long time on these questions of how do you identify politically. What have we learned over the last bunch of decades?
Yeah, so the survey research field really kicked off in the 1940s and the 1950s, and one of the first interesting findings was this idea that the public as a whole does not tend to resemble political leadership, political elites in how they think about politics. And that's an assumption that many people make, but doesn't really get borne out in the survey data. Part of what we're doing in our book is trying to update that. We have a lot of changes in the last several decades of a new media environment with the internet and also the return of partisan media. We have a public that's much more educated than it was back in the 1950s and the 1960s. We have political parties that are much more polarized at the leadership level than we had back then. And yet, despite all of these changes, we see quite similar results. In other words, that people's issue attitudes tend to be not particularly coherent. They tend to be unstable over time. About half of the public doesn't even use ideological labels to describe themselves, and those that do, it's only the most knowledgeable of them where that ideological label has any force in the choices that they're making.
Right, because in the surveys, as you read about in the book, a lot of times a person might say, yeah, I'm a conservative, or yeah, I'm a liberal, but when they go issue by issue, they're maybe exactly the opposite or a mix of what people would consider liberal or conservative. Is that right?
That's right. They can be all over the map, even among people who do use those ideological labels. One of the big conclusions that we have is that there's a major stratifying of the public where there's a top group of maybe 10 or 20% of the public that is quite engaged in political affairs. They follow the news closely and they're very knowledgeable about politics. And for that group, they really do look more ideological like leaders. But for most of the public, they don't have that kind of way of seeing the world. We actually see ideology as a benefit rather than a negative because it helps people organize the political world and to make sense of it. And it's only that upper strata that has that sort of lens to make sense of the political world. The rest of the folks tend to be all over the map in terms of their political attitudes. Some of them are moderate. Some of them kind of bounce back and forth regardless of their labels. But if they don't have that higher level of sophistication, they're not really making sense of those terms.
But maybe let me make the opposite case. Maybe people just kind of straitjacket themselves by saying, I'm a conservative, liberal, libertarian, socialist, or whatever. Maybe it's better to be outside of those labels, take one issue at a time as it comes, and one candidate at a time. Maybe those people are better voters or citizens.
Yeah, that's an interesting argument. It's certainly the case that you can have a knowledgeable citizen or a knowledgeable leader approach politics on an issue-by-issue basis. It's a lot harder to approach politics in those ways that aren't as organized by sort of higher-order principles. The kind of argument that you're suggesting also has a parallel in terms of partisanship, that the thinking that I don't want to be locked into the Republican Party or the Democratic Party or maybe a third party, I want to just think of myself as a political independent. And what we find is that, at least on average, people who call themselves ideological moderates or who don't even place themselves on the scale at all, and likewise people who call themselves political independents, actually tend to be lower in political knowledge, lower in interest in politics, lower in attending to news, and lower in political participation. And so although there might be some exceptions of people who are sort of that idealized citizen of uncommitted but still engaged in politics, on average in the survey research, we don't find that on average.
We're talking to Nathan Calmo. He's author, co-author of the new book, Neither Liberal Nor Conservative. It says that most of us in the United States aren't ideological. We don't come in with a set of principles that we use to weigh issues or candidates or political parties. But that doesn't mean, Nathan, that we don't have ways of relating to politics. You talk about group affiliation. There's an identity that factors into how we relate with politics that may be more important for people than ideology. Can you talk us through that?
Sure. In the absence of ideology for most people, instead, maybe not surprisingly, the predominant force is a partisan identity, but the link between that partisan identity and the substance of issues is often not there. Again, that tends to be moderated by political knowledge, that that a Republican is not necessarily conservative in their views consistently. A Democrat is not consistently liberal, unlike the leadership class. And so you have an identity rooted in partisanship that's sort of substance-free in a way. So you still have the us versus them animosities and certainly have the behavioral commitments to your team when it comes to be election time or when somebody is bad-mouthing your party. You might stand up and say something about it. So you still have that us versus them mentality, but you don't, for most people, you don't have that rooted in a substance that's grounded in principles or issue attitudes. In concert with partisanship, you also have social identities that and social group attitudes, how you think about the prominent groups in society, unions, people of color, big business, those kinds of groups, and that you can, if you are paying attention enough to be able to see the connections between a policy and those groups, you're going to want to support policies that help groups you like and support policies that hurt groups that you dislike. And those social identities can also layer into your partisan identities.
So once we pick our team, it's like being a Packer or New Orleans Saints fan. We're going to support them, and we're not really going to worry about the nuances of ideology. Is that right?
That's right. And I should just add as a side note, I am still a loyal Packer fan.
Well, I would hope so.
I haven't converted to the Saints here. That's the gist, is that you have, again, a top strata of the public that is going to be closely following the lead of partisan leaders. And for the most knowledgeable set of citizens, they will be more likely to express the same ideological principles, the same labels, and the same issue positions as leaders in their party. But as you start to get further down into the public, that same kind of connection doesn't hold, and so it sort of gets lost along the way.
And I want to translate this into recent election terms, and I saw a review of your book that gave this example. Donald Trump, as a candidate, a lot of Republican leaders, intellectuals on in the conservative movement said, our Republican voters are going to reject this guy. He is off the charts. He's not really conservative on issues like trade, government spending, immigration, and more. And yet, here we are. Clearly, a lot of Republican voters embraced Donald Trump. So how does that fit into what you've laid out in your book?
I think it fits pretty well, both on the Republican and the Democratic side. If we had voters, and especially strong partisans who were engaged in the nomination process, who were strong ideologues, then you would expect that maybe the nominees would have been Ted Cruz on the Republican side and Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side. But instead, you saw the partisan voters on each side choose a relatively more moderate candidate, at least in terms of their expressed preferences relative to the other candidates who are in the race. It does fit very well once you get to the general election with the idea that voters aren't attuned. Not only are they not attuned to ideological cues from the candidates, instead they're attuned to party cues about who's got the D next to their name or the R next to their name when it comes to the ballot box. But they're not even attuned to some of the broader traits of the candidates. And for as unusual as the 2016 campaign and election looked, voters responded as if this was a generic Democrat and a generic Republican when we look at their actual electoral behavior.
Nathan Calmo is with us, co-author of the new book, Neither Liberal Nor Conservative, Ideological Innocence in the American Public. He says most Americans don't really define themselves by a political ideology, even though it may look like there's a major ideological divide in the country.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you define yourself as a liberal or as a conservative or a socialist or a libertarian or a moderate? If so, what does that label mean to you? If you're none of the above, how do you decide whom to vote for and what stance to take on issues? Do you identify strongly with a political party? Call 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time.
Nathan Calmo is with us from Louisiana State University, talking about his new book, Neither Liberal Nor Conservative. He and his co-author say most Americans don't really fit into the liberal, conservative, and left-right spectrum of politics.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you fit into the left-right liberal conservative labels, or do you have some views that are considered conservative, others that are liberal? How do you define yourself politically, if at all? How do you make your decisions on a candidate, on an issue? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Brittany starts us off in Madison. Brittany, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm pretty young. I'm 24, and I didn't have politics my whole life. But to me, it seems like the country is very divided, and I was curious if it's always felt like this and maybe where it's going. Are we going towards more of a divide, or what always be like this?
Brittany, thanks for the call. And the divide I think she's pointing toward is the partisan divide, which is definitely pretty strong, I think, Nathan, it's fair to say.
That's right. And we see that both among political leaders. If you look at Congress, the amount of polarization in terms of the voting patterns that you see in Congress, that is higher than it has ever been in our history. You also see that in the animosity expressed by ordinary Democrats and Republicans towards each other. We've tracked over several decades the increasing negativity that partisans express towards the other side, and that's been growing over these years. And in contrast, when we ask people, how do you feel about the other ideological label, we actually don't see a trend like that. So that's another piece of information that we found that suggests that the growing divide, and in particular the growing animosity, is with the party identities and not with a deeper ideological difference.
Brittany, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Mark with us in Richland Center. Mark, hi.
Yeah, I think that this whole divide thing is so shallow and so non-representative what the actual population is, and your survey is showing, look, the population's a heck of a lot more complex than what the media keeps trying to shove down our throats. And I think it's a disservice and a disrespect to the human population to only talk as though there is this shallow left-right possibility and nothing else. The population is a heck of a lot more complex than that, but the media sure as heck is not.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Nathan, to the first part of his point there, the population a lot more complicated than left and right. I'm guessing no argument from you there.
I think that's right. I think there's a lot of validity to the idea that news media tends to boil politics down into simple sound bites, into black and white categories, and that distorts some of the richness of what's really going on in the public and in all politics, really. I would also point the finger a little bit at us, at survey researchers, and to say we're able to get at some of the depth and the complexity of the public with the kinds of questions that we ask, but other kinds of research methods can bring that out even more. Professor Kathy Kramer at Wisconsin uses interview methods to really listen to what people are saying and what they bring up themselves, and that can help to bring out the richness of politics.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go next to Dan with us in Franksville. Dan, hi.
Yeah, it's funny. You got the same animal, the same human animal. Supposedly they have different views and different thoughts on life, which would actually have to be fraudulent. So they must be learning it from somewhere. They get it maybe from the media, which actually is a business. So it's not there to inform you as a business. And that's their job, to sell you things and stuff that you probably don't even need. But I consider myself a conservative, but it's funny, most of my friends, I call them fake conservatives. I'm nice and everything, and it's not their fault because they have little understanding of the issues, just like so-called liberals that are supposed to be, worry about liberal. I don't even know what a liberal even means, but, you know, be nice to people and all this other stuff, but they voted for Hillary Clinton. They hung around with Madeleine Albright that was instrumental as far as Iraq.
So, Dan, thanks a lot for the call. So, Dan, Dan saying he sees in other people anyway a lot of confusion about what it means to be a liberal and or a conservative. And Nathan, he points toward an example I thought of. You get people on the left and on the right for maybe different reasons coming to agreement on, say, an isolationist or non-interventionist military policy in the United States. Given all the different issues that go into left and right, is that another reason maybe to say, maybe they're not that meaningful?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways that you can, a lot of different values and principles that can lead you to agreement, and sometimes even coming from the same abstract principles, you can still wind up with differing conclusions about how we actually go from turning those abstractions into concrete and specific policy outcomes. And this caller also is picking up a similar point from the previous caller that one of the reasons why news media is simplifying is because ultimately they want to have an audience that will respond, they can sell to advertisers, and so on the one hand they have good goals of informing the public, but as journalists, but oftentimes they have a bottom line to watch, and unfortunately the public is often not willing to sit through the more detailed kinds of more nuanced representations, and that's one of the limitations that fits the broader conclusions of our book, that people tend to be less attentive to politics and less patient with more sophisticated ways of connecting political ideas.
Dan, thanks for the call. Dave is with us next in Milwaukee. Dave, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about?
Well, I just was listening to the conversation, and I can tell you, I'm a retired state legislator who is a Democrat, but I consider myself a liberal. Now, what does that mean? You know, I like to think of it as open-minded and think and thoughtful. But what bothers me is that today we've got too many people who throw labels around like liberal or alt-right, et cetera, and like they're like you're calling someone a war criminal, and that just totally warps the conversation. You know, you don't have a discussion anymore. You say, well, you're a liberal, you're a right winger, or whatever, and no one actually gets past that label to listen to what the other person is talking about.
Dave, thanks a lot thanks for the call, Dave. Nathan, we've weaponized our political labels.
Yeah, that's right. especially partisan labels people use as political insults, and it does get in the way the sort of tribal thinking of us versus them in a partisan context can really shut down conversations and really hide that in many cases the substance of our political views and some of our broader values might have more in common than you might think.
Thanks for the call, Dave. Briefly, as we wrap up, Nathan, are you starting to think about ways we could do this all better to get people more engaged in maybe a not less, as you say, tribal way?
Well, one of the paradoxes of all of this is that, as I alluded to earlier, we have this notion of an uncommitted but engaged citizen, and that's really, although there might be individual examples of that, it's hard to see a broader public that becomes more engaged but yet more open-minded or less attached to party or even ideology. It seems like, with all of the evidence that we have from decades of surveys, it's a trade-off. You either have a public that's disengaged and relatively not ideological, or a public that is more engaged and is more committed to one side or the other.
We'll leave it there for now. Nathan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
We've been talking to Nathan Calmo. He's an assistant professor of political communication at Louisiana State University. He's from Wisconsin, still a Packer fan, as he mentioned. He's co-author of the new book we've been talking about. It's called Neither Liberal Nor Conservative, Ideological Innocence in the American Public. Still time for you to weigh in over at the Central Time Facebook page. Do you use a political label for yourself like liberal, conservative, socialist, libertarian, moderate? And what does it mean to you? That's the Central Time Facebook page.